Cookbooks can be incredibly powerful tools for both examining women's history and empowering women through the art of cooking. So then why, in 2015, is there still this notion that the home and the kitchen is only a place for an oppressed woman? In the emerging field of feminist food studies, which has really started to come up within the past 20 years, scholars analyze cookbooks, food writing, and recipes to observe women's history by looking at the way women lived their daily lives. In the book, From Betty Crocker to Feminist Food Studies, Barbara Haber and Arlene Vosky-Evakian say that studying the most banal of human activities can yield crucial information and insights about both daily life and worldview, from what is in the pot to the significance of what's cooking it. Feminist Food Studies looks at history through the everyday tasks performed by everyday women. And because these tasks seem really mundane and boring, they are often overlooked. What is the point of analyzing things that are so commonplace?
But then, again, I think that that's a reason why we should look at it, because we don't really see what's special about it, and we overlook it. So then it's a good thing to maybe take a closer kind of analysis of this text and see what it says maybe about ourselves or what it says about our culture.
That was Elizabeth Flights, an assistant professor at Lindenwood University who studies cookbook writing as a woman's rhetorical practice. I read her article, Cooking Codes, Cookbook Discourses as Women's Rhetorical Practices. I wanted to talk to her and learn more about what she has learned in her analysis of cookbooks. So what would you say is special about it? Like, what can we see from cookbooks as a source that we can't see from somewhere else?
Well, I mean, I think that we can really see the community, how a community, you know, is built. And from the third chapter of my dissertation, I focus on one type of cookbook, the community cookbook that was put together from a church group, or usually it was a women's organization, who its members would volunteer recipes to be included in the publication, and then they would use that, they would sell that to make money in support of their charity or towards their organization. So I think especially with that kind of act of putting together recipes in service of an organization, really helps to show that how cooking is so closely linked to community, and how cooking and recipe sharing really helps to represent a community.
So through the sharing of recipes, women can come together and form connections with each other and build communities. But not only do cookbooks and recipe sharing help women bond with each other, it also gives them an opportunity to express themselves as individuals through food. Elizabeth speaks more on the writing that women include in the community cookbooks to accompany their recipes as well.
They might have a little bit of an introduction to the recipe to say when they enjoy making this, like, we like to make this for Thanksgiving dinner or something like that, to give a hint of what their life is like or what their family is like, just through the act of cooking.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can get a lot of, you know, an individual's identity and their interests and what their life is like just from reading a recipe, just from seeing what kind of recipes they might be really proud of and want to talk about and want to share with you in a community cookbook, and get to know them just through that way.
Cooking and cookbooks have brought women together, as evidenced by these community cookbooks. But despite that fact, a lot of feminists look down on cooking and view it as a domestic act that is forced upon women, and therefore anti-feminist. And they feel that way about cookbooks, too. In the preface of From Betty Crocker to Feminist Food Studies, Haber and Evakian mention that when Barbara Haber put together a large collection of cookbooks for the Schlesinger Library, many feminists and women's studies scholars didn't support her work because they viewed cookbooks as, quote, marks of women's oppression. This view was quite common in the 1970s, but I think that a lot of women still feel this way today as well. The 1970s were in the middle of the second wave feminist movement, which started largely as a reaction to how after World War II, women returned to their domestic lives and their purposes were to be incredibly family-oriented and take care of the home. Women began to realize that this kind of lifestyle not only left them feeling empty and unfulfilled, but it was a waste of their potential and individuality. In Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, which is widely considered to be a major catalyst in starting second wave feminism, she describes this feeling as the problem that has no name, The problem being that even though the suburban housewife was doing everything that she was promised would make her happy, she was still anxious, depressed, and unfulfilled. She was getting married, having kids, living in the suburbs, cooking, cleaning, running PTA meetings, but she still had this problem, but she didn't know how to describe it, hence the problem with no name. And even though so many women were experiencing these feelings, more and more articles and books and magazines came out telling them how to be a better cook, how to be a better wife, how to be a better parent, as if the reason they were feeling these feelings was because they weren't doing their job as women right, rather than that being forced into this job was causing them to feel like their lives were meaningless. So I think that the argument that Barbara Haber and Arlene Vosky-Evakian's critics in the 70s were making was that cookbooks served a similar purpose. That cookbooks are media that perpetuates this idea that a woman's role is in the kitchen. And even though Betty Friedan's book came out in 1963, a lot of the fear of returning to the domestic suburban housewife lifestyle still exists today. For example, think of how irritating and hurtful it is every single time someone makes some stupid joke telling you to go back to the kitchen and make me a sandwich. And while I understand this argument, and agree that this societally forced domestic lifestyle was oppressive and was preventing women from leading emotionally satisfying lives, I think that to say that cookbooks are a mark of women's oppression is a total oversimplification and generalization of what a cookbook is and what it can be. Elizabeth Flights and other feminist food study scholars have already written about how cookbooks have been used as an outlet for women's creative expression and as a way to form communities in the past, and cookbooks are still continuing to be tools of empowerment today.
I think there might be a general rejection of taking on cooking because there's that simple notion that I want to be, a freer woman and not trapped by the kitchen. And so what I found is that so many of these women that I've worked with really don't have the power to take care of themselves physically through eating well.
This is Jamie Heskett, a doctor who focuses on women's health and longevity. She's coming out with a cookbook soon full of recipes that help teach women how to take better care of their bodies and get excited about their own health rather than everybody else's.
So in creating this particular cookbook, it really allows women to not only nurture themselves on the inside, but nurture themselves in terms of taking care of themselves overall, putting themselves first.
In the process of making this cookbook, Jamie also invited women to come cook together and prepare the recipes, and she also noticed the power a sense of community has in empowering women.
Women get together and share, whether it's in an office environment or in the kitchen or something like that, the level of excellence of power rise.
And it's
empowering for women to understand that they are part of a greater community, that they are part of a group of other women who are like-minded. It decreases the amount of guilt that they may feel taking care of themselves, which is a huge factor. It's actually really wonderful. I saw a lot of women grow tremendously just from being part of a group and cooking together.
So I think that when we're talking about cookbooks, it's important to take into context what kind of cookbook it is. If it's a cookbook that's being used to bring women together to learn valuable cooking skills and better themselves through nutrition and self-care, that's great, and a really powerful resource for women to have. But that being said, I also recognize that some cookbooks are oppressive, such as diet cookbooks that focus less on nutritional value and more on cutting calories and fat. Those kinds of books can foster a really unhealthy relationship with food and can make women hate themselves and hate their bodies too. But to say that cookbooks and cooking are a mark of women's oppression is just pointing the finger at the wrong thing, in my opinion. In an article from Feminist Current, Natalie Jovanovsky said, quote, "Ultimately, it is not feminism that divorces women from food and cooking. It is the patriarchal social structures that confine women to the kitchen." So I feel that it is important to remember that enjoying cooking or other things that are deemed as domestic does not make you a bad feminist. In fact, coming together and cooking is a really awesome way to build confidence, community, and make you feel powerful. So the next time someone makes some shitty sexist joke telling you to go back to the kitchen, acknowledge that there is not a place on the planet that someone can send you that will rid you of your identity, individuality, and power. So you can be a bad bitch from the kitchen too.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.